Welcome to Bassmaster Radio, presented by Phoenix Boats, the show for fishermen by fishermen. Today's show is brought to you by Enigma Fishing, Cast, Catch, Repeat. Visit Anderson, South Carolina, home of beautiful Lake Hartwell. Phoenix Boats, experience the difference. And by the Bass Anglers Sportsman Society. Now, here's lifetime BASS member, Tom Abraham.
Welcome to this week's episode of Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. I am Tom Abraham, your guide for the next hour as we feature the Bassmaster Elite Series and those looking to get into that exclusive group through the BassPro.com Open Series and the up-and-comers on the Carhartt Bassmaster College Series presented by Bass Pro Shops and the tens of thousands of Bass Nation anglers around the country competing on the local level, all with a chance to advance to the big leagues of professional fishing. The Bass Nation operates youth, high school, and college programs, including a Junior Bassmaster Championship, a high school national championship, the college national championship, and the college bracket leading to the Bassmaster Classic. The Bass Nation is at the grassroots of who we are. And for more information on how to become a member or to start a Bass Nation club, visit Bassmaster.com and click on the Nation tab. The best way to communicate with the show, to post your pictures or tell us your stories or just comment on the show, is to visit our Facebook fan page at facebook.com/BASS or on Twitter at Bassmaster and use the hashtag Bass Radio. You can also listen to all the shows at Bassmaster.com/radio or just hit the watch button at Bassmaster.com and click on Bassmaster Radio. Kicking off today's show, Bass CEO Bruce Aiken will join us to discuss the plan for this season's elite season, which is on pause during the coronavirus pandemic. What has not paused is the spring fishing season, and maybe one of the safest places to be is out there on the water catching these fish that are on the move right now. So right now, you'll find a bunch of how-to articles at Bassmaster.com. And speaking of how-to, I had the opportunity to fish the Eastern Open at Toho this past January with Randy Blockett, and I watched him masterfully work a jerkbait with a spinning rod. Now, this is a deadly technique, and Randy is on today to tell us how he does it. Then, you know, everyone always says no one remembers who finished second at the Bassmaster Classic. Well, we know who finished second, and he won over $50,000 doing it. It was longtime pro Todd Auden. So he'll join us a little bit later on in the show to talk about how he did that at Gunnersville and what his thoughts are for the season coming up. So plenty to get into today on Bassmaster Radio, and I think you're going to enjoy it as we do a little bit of technique of the week and look forward with Bruce Aiken and Todd Auden. So grab a cup of coffee and jump on board as we pull this show away from the dock.
Welcome back to Bassmaster Radio, presented by Phoenix Boats. Now, here's your host, Tom Abraham.
And welcome back, Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. And as promised in the open, we're going to get things started with the boss, Bruce Aiken, the CEO. I usually don't talk to him this many times, but, you know, these are unique times and unique circumstances that we are in. And they've been working with various authorities and different towns and so on and adjusting the schedule for the upcoming tournaments that are on the schedule. And it's more than the elites. It's all of the opens and the college and the high school and everything else. So I thought, let's reach out to the boss. And he graciously joins us once again, Bruce Aiken. Bruce, welcome in. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I've been better, but you know, these are unprecedented times, and challenging times for the whole country and the world, really. You know, the good things, we still got that fishing outlet where people can talk about social distancing and isolation out in the middle of the lake in a boat. Fishing is a good place to be these days.
Yeah, and it's at springtime. We know it's springtime because the grass is growing and the trees are blooming and everything is happening. And the fish, you know, they're not definitely not self-quarantining. They're out there because I went out for 3 hours the other day, caught six fish, and was very happy doing it. So, you know, for the 550,000 members of the Bass Angler Sportsman Society, this is a great time to be out fishing and learning about a bunch of different techniques and so on. It's just the tournament that makes it kind of tough to deal with right now.
Yeah, it is. But like you said, you know, we're trying to put a lot of basics information out now online and encourage people to get out and fish while we're sort of on hold with the tournament season. But We're committed to do what we can. Every intention is to complete the season. It might be a little bit later, but we're still confident that also that we need to do our part as citizens, country, to not do what we can not to spread the virus and that kind of thing. And that it sort of seems to me like an invisible kind of thing. You really don't know you've got it. You've got it. And, take all the precautions. We're most of our folks are working, remotely now, but we're still open for business, trying to, continue to, feed content to the masses that are hungry for it. And I was just reading an article about, ESPN and what they're doing to try to, fill programming hours. Of course, we've offered up that we've got plenty of hours of fishing content to put out there as well. So, it will go on. But like I said, we're living in unprecedented times, we think we just got to stay in communication with all of our anglers and fans and do what we can to make as much positive out of it as we can. And we're confident that we will. We may be doing it remotely, a little bit differently. Fortunately, we have all these electronic means that we can work with now and still be in communication.
No disrespect to any other circuits or anything, but Bass was the leader in making moves early with their schedule. And let's face it, thousands of people show up to a Bassmaster Elite event between the expo and the weigh-ins and everything else. So it was a prudently responsible thing to do. It's not about necessarily the fishermen who are out in boats by themselves on the lake. You can do that. I mean, there are ways to do that. But it's all those people that want to go and enjoy these events. The other thing that is kind of interesting is, fall fishing is great. And this year you had made adjustments to the schedule that had everything pretty much wrapping up in late August, which was earlier than ever before, really. And if it comes to pass where you have to use, say, October, to complete the season, you still have all of that time open. So it's kind of serendipitous that kind of September and October are wide open, and that's great fishing time all around the country.
Yeah, it is, and that's what we're talking to hosts about. Contingency planning, really. Nobody knows yet what's going on. We're looking now at our April and May tournaments. Hopefully, we can still get those in. But if we don't, what are potential dates on down the calendar? You get into most places, July, August, the heat, and that's typically when we're up north anyway, but then, right. Fishing comes back pretty well, and, May is still good, and then like I said, September, October, we'll cycle back to some more good fishing at some of the venues we've got. Some, we may or may not, hopefully we won't have to, change anymore, but appears we got to keep an eye on it. We've got a UFall Elite coming up week after next, and we've said we'll make a call next Thursday as late as we can, really, before people start traveling, on whether we'll have that or not. We're looking at contingency planning, how we might do tournaments differently for foreseeable future. As you said, to be without fans, it's probably without marshals for a little while. So we're looking at how can we still conduct the tournaments and get them in, but keep everybody safe, because we do have marshals, we've got our staff, sponsors, and their staff, service crews, on down the line, beyond the anglers. As we said before, the anglers will fish. If we say go fish, they'll go fish and then want to. And it's also their livelihood as well. And we recognize that and want to get them back on the water as soon as we can. And in the meantime, we've deferred deposits and entry fee payments and that kind of thing. We just week told the elite anglers we're going to go ahead and pay kind of the, you know, minimum payout that we pay, you know, is, you know, we pay all the way down the field. So we're going to go ahead and advance that. We have Chickamauga this week. So we're trying to do things like that to help people know the government is, you know, trying to do things as well. But I try to keep things afloat best we can.
Yeah. And certainly some of the guys have told me that they, you know, if a couple of tournaments end up in the summer, you know, they like a tough tournament. You know, it's a, right. We know that this is the prime time to go and load up at certain places, but, you know, it's kind of cool too to get out there and figure it out when things are a little tough. All right, before I let you go, the coronavirus threat was already hanging over everybody's head, yet 130,000 people almost showed up in Birmingham for the Classic. What a stunning turnout for Classic 50 under the circumstances. It was it was really something to see.
It was, and, you know, we were fortunate to get it in, and, you know, we were on the front end of it, and, you know, probably a week or two later we wouldn't have gotten it in, but, yeah, we're very fortunate on that. It was a great 50th Classic. It was a, you know, record in the state of Alabama. It was the 13th time in the 50 years it was in Alabama, and we beat the previous record by, like, 35% or so. So we were pleased with it. Had a lot of great events throughout the week. We kicked off the new kayak series and had the second event last weekend. So we're, you know, pleased with the turnout. A lot of effort put into it. A lot of legends there. We had a, you know, set up in the Bassmaster booth that kind of showed the whole history of the Classics.
Yeah.
And we recognized a lot of, you know, the Classic winners that were able to, you know, come and be there. It had a good turnout of those as well. The expo was dynamic every day. We had a couple of new rooms that we haven't used in the past, and I think people, you know, eventually found those, and business was bustling for the exhibitors. So all in all, you know, we were excited about it. We had the Get Hooked on Fishing Kids thing, the first, you know, bass casting kit, Casper Kids Humanitarian Award that was presented by Clay Dyer to a standing ovation. And so just all in all, it was great. It benefited Children's of Alabama here. How much more timely could that have been?
Right.
You know, so we were, you know, we were really pleased about it and happy about it. And, you know, the fishing was good. Hank kind of, you know, ran away with it, but he had to keep catching them.
Yeah.
Because he had some good anglers on his heels.
Yeah, no doubt the lake showed out for sure for the 50th Bassmaster Classic. Bruce Aiken has been our guest, the CEO of Bass. Bruce, I appreciate you taking some time. I know you're very busy right now, but I appreciate you sharing this, what's going on with our listeners.
Okay. Thanks, Tom.
All right. Thank you. All right. Coming up next, we do Technique of the Week with Randy Blockett. How do you jerkbait with a spinning reel? Well, he's going to tell us next right here on Bassmaster Radio on the Bassmaster Radio Network.
Welcome back to Bassmaster Radio, presented by Phoenix Boats. Now, here's your host, Tom Abraham.
And welcome back, Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. And a little technique of the week time now. It's jerkbait time out there. And, you know, I had the opportunity at Kissimmee at the Eastern Open to fish with Randy Blockett. And I saw this guy. What a master he is with a jerkbait. But he was doing it with a spinning rod. Now, a lot of guys will throw those light jerkbaits with a spinning rod and the bigger jerkbaits with a bait caster. But he throws all of his jerkbaits with a spinning rod. He's a master at it. And he joins us now to talk about that technique. Randy, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me. Doing good, man.
I joked the other day. I had posted some social media from out on the lake saying that, you know, I was self-quarantining and there was no one fishing within 6.5 feet of me, so I felt like I was in good shape.
Yeah, that's the best place to be right now. You know, so we're in good shape as long as they keep the boat ramps open, but I have a feeling we'll still be sneaking into those lakes even if they do close them.
And those of you that don't know Randy Blockett, he has won well over $1.5 million on both the Bass and FLW circuits, was part of Bass for years and years, and then jumped over to FLW, and now working his way back to the elites through the Opens circuit. And before we get to our technique, of course, Louisville has been postponed. We're going to use that word right now. And then, you know, kind of worried about Cherokee and Eastern Open, which is coming up the first week of of May, and I'd imagine that everybody's just kind of champing at the bit to get back out there competing. It'll be interesting to see whether these tournaments are able to be rescheduled or whether or not they'll just be totally canceled.
Yeah, it's, you know, we've had a big break in between. I have never had a two month break in this time of year like we've had after the Eastern Open in Florida. So I think everybody is really looking forward to getting back at it next week. But, you know, it's like I said, everybody's in the same boat with it. So we'll just be patient and see how it plays out.
Yeah, that's a great point. All right, let's talk a little bit about this, you know, jerk baiting with a spinning outfit. First of all, talk about the outfit itself, the rod that you like to use in terms of stiffness and so on, and the line that you'll use when you're jerk baiting with a spinning rod.
Well, like I said, I've been doing this now for, man, probably 10 years, I guess. And I, you know, growing up here in Missouri, you know, I've been fishing jerk baits for 40 years. I mean, back when we were way the old Spoonbill Rebels. So I've seen the technique evolve. And since I live here in the Ozarks, you know, it's just a big, big technique. And I've had a chance to really spend so many hours, you know, really trying to perfect that technique. And about 10 years ago, after experimenting with it, I just realized that spinning gear is so much more efficient as far as how to fish that bait, as far as the casting, manipulating the lure, imparting action on it, being able to go down to the lighter lines. But I basically got two different setups on it. I use two different rods. I use the Megabass 611 Whip Snake, which is a fairly stiff butt, and it's got a medium tip, a fairly soft medium tip. And I'll use that like on all the the Megabass the 110s, the X80s, and the smaller jerkbaits, because, you know, it just allows me, like I said, to probably cast, I'm going to guess, 20% further than what people could with a bait caster. Right. And I can drop down to that 6 and 8 pound test line, which I prefer particularly during the winter time of the year. You know, I use 6 pound test line probably 75-80% of the year time during the winter time. And if I'm using the bigger jerk baits, now a lot of people say, well, you know, I what if you go to, like, you know, the larger sizes? So if I go to, like, to the 110 Magnum or the Edo Shiner or some of the bigger jerk baits, like if you use Smithwick Rogues, like the Magnum Rogue, the, you know, the Perfect 10, those bigger jerk baits, I'll still use the spinning rod, but I'll upgrade to Megabass makes one. It's a 7-foot rod called the Shaky Head Special. It has a little bit faster tip, and it allows you a little bit more power in those heavier jerk baits. So that's my two main setups for it rod wise.
And you're not using, you're straight fluorocarbon on that, right? You're not using any braid. I noticed when I fished with you and you were doing it, it was pretty much the whole reel is just loaded with the fluoro.
Yeah, you don't want to, when you're jerk bait fishing, there's no need to use a braid of fluoro because the bait is not, you can't make the same presentation with the bait. It doesn't lay the same in the water. The twitches that you have on the rod are actually, you can overwork the bait with braid because you don't have the stretch on there. So a straight fluorocarbon, I use a Seagarden VizX, anywhere between 6 to 12 pound test line, depending upon, you know, the depth I'm trying to attain and the cover that I'm fishing around. But straight fluorocarbon is the way to go with jerkbait fishing by far. Now, some of the guys, you know, some of the Ozark guys around here that still use the bait casters will even go to monofilament. They want a little bit more stretch.
Right.
But I'd highly recommend everybody to not use the braid fluorocarbon on jerk baits.
Yeah, I know. I like to use the mono, but I use it with a bait caster. Now, you have to be committed to retying. I notice you have to retie. You know, you do retie quite a bit. Part of it's the light line. Part of it is the spinning outfit because, let's be honest, it, you know, you do get a little bit of that, you know, twist, that line twist and so on. Is there anything you do to deal with that? Do you use any kind of a product to help with the line twist, or it's just something you just resign yourself to the fact that you're going to retie, you know, as often as possible?
Yeah, I think you saw a little bit of that when we fished together at Toho. That's sort of the thing you have to accept on that. But there's a couple things you can do. First of all, you know, make sure that your line comes off the spool or goes on the reel the same way it comes off your line spool. That's real critical with that. Make sure you load that reel with tension when you put the line on, and you can even help it out more if you put that line in a bucket of water because that'll sort of take that memory away from it. Other than that, you can use line conditioner a little bit. It'll help out. And another thing is do not fill your reel, you know, too full. I like to leave like anywhere between a 16th to an 1/8-inch gap on the reel itself, and that'll prevent it. And another thing is just sort of make a visual check, because the times that you get the fluff are the times that normally you have an existing loop in your reel. So just if you just make sort of like a visual before you make your cast, that'll eliminate a lot of that. But that's sort of the price you pay for using that technique. But you know, the advantages far outweigh, you know, any inconvenience that'll cause.
Randy Blocko with us talking about jerk baiting with a spinning rod. What about, you know, a lot of us like to throw a jerk bait up against a bluff wall and sometimes target it and use some of those areas. Do you find that you can still have that accuracy? I know I personally struggle a little bit sometimes with the spinning off it, you know, having that accuracy when you let it fly near a wall and it's like, oh gosh, I think I just threw it 6 feet up on the shore.
Well, yeah, you can, you know, the big key on that, you know, is learn to cast two-handed with your spinning rods, because you can generate so much more power and accuracy with a two-handed cast. And, I operate an instructional jerkbait service here in Missouri, and almost every single person I take out that has never fished a spinning rod will wind up using it, you know, after we go out, because just the advantage is the longer cast. Yeah. Once you get that bait down in the sweet spot, the deepest part that the bait actually runs, you can actually control and you can manipulate and you can finesse that jerk bait a lot better with a spinning outfit. Because this time of year, when I'm working a jerk bait, when it's at its deepest point, I'm not using what most people consider the jerk pause. I'm almost like crappie fishing with it. I'm sort of like barely reeling it, pulling it. And you have so much better feel with a spinning rod than you could ever do with a bait caster on that. And another thing is back reeling. You know, when you're dealing with jerkbait fishing with light line in the wintertime, I never use a drag. I always back reel, and you can't do that with bait casting outfits. You can free spool it, yeah, but when you're dealing with fish that are barely hooked, you know, in jerkbait fishing, spinning reel will allow you to back reel, and you land a lot more of those fish.
Yeah, and I saw Randy land some pretty good-sized fish doing that. He finished 18th at Kissimmee, largely with that jerkbait over open water grass. Now here was an experience I had. I got back, and I immediately tied on a couple of jerkbaits onto spinning outfits. I went out to use that technique, and I realized that it was the opposite hand, because I used that jerk pause, you know, with a bait casting outfit, and I'm doing that with my right hand, and then I realized, wait a minute, I hold the spinning reel in my left hand, and it felt so weird. I mean, I guess it's something you just got to go out and work on, but it was at first it's really kind of difficult, because you're switching hands in a technique that you've been doing for years, maybe, you know, with the other hand.
Yeah, it's all, and you know, that's why I always tell everybody, I said, you know, jerkbait fishing is the most difficult technique to master, because you have so many controlled and uncontrolled variables, and you put the action on the bait yourself. It's not like a crankbait or a worm where you throw it out there and just, you know, work it back. I mean, you actually have to manipulate this bait. And once you get that feel for it, once you get that rhythm, particularly with a spinning rod, it feels super awkward to pick up a bait caster. Like right now, when I throw a jerk bait on a bait caster, which I do maybe 5% of the time, like if I'm fishing around, you know, I don't want the bait to go over a couple foot deep, I'm making short casts around, you know, objects like dock corners and stumps. So there's a very small window while I use that. But when I pick up a bait caster now, it feels super awkward because I'm so comfortable with the spinning setup.
Wow, there you go. Randy Blockett talking about jerk baiting with a spinning outfit. All right, before I let you go, you're running a tin boat, another experiment, running a Ranger aluminum boat. And talk a little bit about that and how that has worked out, the pluses and minuses of it.
When I was fishing, you know, bass full time, you know, we had smaller boats, like we had the 18 foot Rangers. And back then I always tried to get in these hard to reach spots. And as the boats got bigger, I couldn't do that anymore. So the last couple of years I've been thinking about it. It's like, you know, I want to give this a try. I just want to try it for a season, see how it goes, try to get back in some of the skinny water. And it's been great so far. You know, we fish together out of a Toho, you remember, you know, I've been doing a lot of my instructional trips on it. I'm just very comfortable with it. I love the way it's fishing. You know, the only downside that you have about it is you don't have quite the storage. So you have to be a little bit more creative with your packing, and it catches a little bit more wind, but the advantages of it, as far as the fishability of it and just the, you know, that, the simplification of it. I'm really liking it, so I'm really looking forward to the rest of the season out of it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to fish out of it, and it certainly had some giddy up, that's for sure. Randy Blockett has been our guest. Randy, I appreciate you so much. Stay safe, and we'll see you sometime. We'll see you back out there at the BassPro.com Bassmaster Open Circuit.
Okay, sounds good, man. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you. All right, we'll get a break in here. Bye. We'll come back with more right after this. Phoenix Boats Bass.
Welcome back to Bassmaster Radio, presented by Phoenix Boats. Now, here's your host, Tom Abraham.
And welcome back, Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. And you know, they always say nobody remembers who finished second at the Classic. Well, I know who finished second at the Classic. It was Todd Otten who finished second at the Classic. Last week, we talked to Hank Cherry about his victory. But you know what? Let's give a little love to the guy that finished second at the Classic. Made over $50,000. That's a good check. And it was the best tournament he ever had on Gunnersville. So he joins us now. Todd, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. How you been?
I'm fantastic. I've been telling people, I've been self quarantining by going out on the water. I figure that's the safest place to be because there's never anybody within 6.5 feet of me. You know what I mean? I just stay in the front of that boat and hang out on the water.
That's what I told my wife. I said, I'll just have to go fishing more often.
Yeah.
And she didn't kind of like that. But, you know.
Well, you know, the funny thing is the grass is still growing. The flowers are blooming. The trees are blooming. All this stuff is going on. I mean, then the nature's not going to stop. And even though our tournaments, whether they're the club level or the Opens or the Elite Series, you know, tournaments are being postponed like crazy. But that doesn't mean that the spring fishing season isn't hot as ever out there on those lakes. And folks got to stay out on there, get on, take advantage of this thing. Even if you're not going to get a check for it, at least you're going to get your line stretched.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best place to be. You know, you could be out there by yourself all day and, you know, never see another guy out there to get close to you, you know, probably another 100 yards anyway. So it's a good place to be, and, you know, it takes your mind off everything else.
Well, let's talk about the Classic. It was a surreal scene, even with the threat of the coronavirus and everything else. There was 130,000 people that showed up over the 3-day event at the Bassmaster Classic, and you guys went out there and gave it the old college try. You were extremely consistent, 20 pounds day one, 18 day two, almost 21 on day three. But, man, Hank made that 29-3 on day one hold up, and it was just tough to – unless he totally crashed and burned, it was going to be tough to track him down.
Yeah, it was. I mean, everybody, you know, after that first day, they kind of knocked all the wind out of everybody's sail. And, of course, you know, Gunnersville, being Gunnersville, you could pull up to a place and bust one of those 30-pound bags. And, you know, that's what kept everybody going, even though we was all, you know, just fishing for second place, really.
Yeah. Well, you can also have one of those 7 or 8 pound bags, though, right? I mean, because we saw that happen to some guys. Hunter Shryock had, you know, just under 19 pounds day one, had 8 pounds on day two, and it just caught one fish on day three. So we saw that happen with a number of guys, Greg DePalma, Cody Huff, some of the others that struggled. You know, so there was always that possibility.
Yeah. That's the thing. You know, when you got all that pressure, especially that last day, and I was fortunate to catch a good one right off the bat, and it kind of settles you down and everything. And I understood, you know, Hank heard he had a slow morning, and that was probably just his nerves. You know, he just had to get one in the boat, and once he did, you know, things just started clicking for him.
Talk about the areas that you fished, because you did have this consistent, 58 pounds, 10 ounces over 3 days, which is going to win a lot of tournaments. But just talk about the area that you were fishing in, at Gunnersville.
Yeah, I mean, the first day we'd had a ton of rain the night before, and I was fishing in the back of Browns Creek, and it had already a lot of color. And I was kind of concerned about that being real muddy. And then when I show up, I thought it was trashed, really. But I ended up catching, you know, like a 3-pounder. And then I caught that big fish of the tournament right there in that mud. And I was like, well, maybe, you know, I can sit here and squeak out a limit or something with this big fish. But I quit getting bites after I caught that big fish. And so I left that. Kind of abandoned that deal and started running some docks. I caught one on the first dock, and I was like, man, they're going to be on this stuff. And
I fished about 15 docks, nothing. So I run up to Honeycomb Creek. I had one spot there, but it was a savior. I had one bite there in practice, and I pulled up in the tournament and probably caught five or six pretty good fish real quick. And, you know, that gave me most of my weight added to that big fish. And that was my savior the first day. And then, you know, after that, the second day, I'm showing up at the same spot in Browns thinking, you know, it's still going to be muddy. But I had to go check it because I was close by. And when I showed up, the water looked beautiful in there, and it's pushed back. The mud was pushed back a little bit right beyond my spot. And, man, it was just on fire, you know, that second day and the third day. And it just cleared up just enough that I could still catch them on that chatterbait. And I caught a few on that red-eye shad I was throwing back there, too.
What kind of depth did you have back there? What were you targeting depth-wise?
I was probably sitting most of the time in about 4 or 5 foot of water. And, you know, I had a little steeper drop, but it went from 3, 4, 5, you know, pretty quick right back there where I was fishing. And like I say, most of the time I was sitting probably 4 foot of water. And you could use your power poles pretty easy and, you know, still hit the bottom good. But the grass, it was kind of scattered where I was getting the bites, and it would come up to about 1.5 feet from the surface. So, you know, you'd feel your bait ticket, and you'd just slow it down and let it fall on the other side of the clump, and that's usually when it hit the, you know, hit the bait.
Talking about that chatterbait in a moment, Todd Otten with us here talking about a second-place finish at the Bassmaster Classic, presented by Hook, the Academy Sports and Outdoors Bassmaster Classic. And talk about that lipless crankbait, though, and technique there. Are you yo-yoing that stuff and ripping it through those weeds, or were you bringing it with a steady retrieve?
You know, I was throwing it, and I'd let it go down just a little bit so it start in the grass. I wanted it to hit the grass or to get stuck in the grass so I could rip it loose. And it seemed like that eel grass, if it was real thick, I mean, you wouldn't even hardly get it through there, and it would be almost like hung up. And so I figured, you know, I had to wind it more than I wanted to, a little bit faster. So that's what really keep me on chatterbait, because it's like, you know, that rattlebait was just hanging up a little bit too much in the grass, and the chatterbait, I could work it through there slower and felt like I was giving them a better presentation and a chance to get the bait. Because, you know, sometimes I'd slap at the bait, miss it, and the water was still pretty cool, you know, for throwing a chatterbait for me. I usually don't like to throw it in below 50-degree water. And, you know, when we started practice, it was like 45, and I was still getting a few bites on it. So it was, you know, usually a rattlebait's usually what I got in my hand when it's like that. But they hit the chatterbait good enough, I just stuck with it.
We know how effective the chatterbait can be around grass. You fish a lot of lakes that don't have as much grass as well, especially over in the Carolinas and so on. Do you use it in those situations as well? And just talk about your technique when you're using it.
Yeah, I mean, well, we don't have the grass, but we'll have like docks or rocks. That's usually what I'm fishing here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just got to, when you throw it in there, you just got to have a slower retrieve this time of year. And, you know, with the dock fishing, I always try to target hitting the poles. And a lot of times I'll try to throw it in there and hit the first pole, you know, so it'll bounce out a little bit. And if there's a fish there, he'll hear it and it'll trigger a bite. But, you know, you have to take it by how much water depth you got and the retrieve there. But I usually like to stay with like a 1/2 ounce instead of switching up to a 3/8 or something in the shallower water. But I guess it's just a preference or a feel I get with that 1/2 ounce bait that I can keep it at the depth I want, you know, easier, it seems like.
Yeah, Todd Auten with us here talking about what he did to finish second at the Bassmaster Classic on Guntersville. You know, red was the color. They always say in the springtime at Guntersville, it doesn't matter what color it is as long as it's some kind of red. And you went there, you had that kind of orange-red looking chatterbait that's really sexy looking jackhammer chatterbait. And then, of course, the red-eyed shad as well. We saw some guys doing some things also with the green pumpkin and some of the more traditional colors. Why do you think the fish react, though, so much to that red?
Well, I think where I was, you know, it was because of the water color, you know, was pretty dirty, especially the first day. But even the second day, you could only see down probably 6-8 inches in the water, you know. And I think, you know, I tried different colors. And they wanted that red for some reason. They could just find it better. And, you know, I tried green pumpkin, black and blue, and white chartreuse. But they definitely wanted that red, you know, because I never caught anything other than maybe one fish on a green pumpkin the whole practice and everything. And the rest of them was on that red everywhere I went. So, but, you know, the lake, when we got there, practice was a lot dirtier, it seemed, than when the tournament got here. You know, some of the creeks muddied up a little bit from all that rain, but everywhere else, you know, there's pulling so much current through there, it just seemed to clear up quick. And, you know, it changed that. And that's why some guys probably ended up catching them on the green pumpkin, because, you know, their water was clearing.
So
a lot quicker.
Yeah. So to you, the you got to go more natural when the water is clearer. You want to go the more stained it is, the more bright that you go with as far as that.
Yep, that's usually the rule of thumb. And really, you know, the red colors, I don't usually throw them a whole lot, not unless I'm, you know, fishing in the springtime. It just seems like they like that red, or they don't like that red. They hit it, you know, just like they're trying to kill it or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know why that is, but, you know, how red is in grass especially, it seems like it's a better color when you got some stained water.
Yeah.
For sure.
They're out of stock, as usual, right now. So,
yeah.
So the big question is, how many did you have in that fire craw color? Were you chasing everyone down? If you hung up, you had to go get that thing.
Man, I tell you what, I went in several tackle stores while I was there, and nobody had one. And I had bought three before I left, and I used the same one every day. Luckily, I didn't lose any. But after the tournament, I'd let, you know, a couple reporters have them to take pictures with, which I hadn't never got them back yet. But I was like, they're probably gone. They sold them on eBay or something. But I was trying to get some last week because I was like, man, I might need that thing at Chickamauga when I go before they cancel that tournament. And luckily, a buddy of mine had two or three of them. And he was going to let me borrow some, but I just getting back to him the other day. I said, well, I don't think I'll be doing these for a while since, you know, they're canceling the lakes and, you know, they might end up canceling New Fallas. So by then, it'll probably be a different deal.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, maybe a totally
on the shad spawn or something.
Yeah, it could be a totally different tournament by the time you guys get around to it. Well, congratulations on the second place finish, 17th at the St. John's, so you're off to a good start. We know the Elite Tour is going to get going again here at some particular point in time, and we wish you the best of luck for a big season.
Well, I sure appreciate it. And all the fans out there for all the good, kind words they've said this week.
All right, thank you. Ranger Pro Todd Auten joining us there. All right, we'll come back and wrap it up next on Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio on the Bassmaster Radio Network.
Welcome back to Bassmaster Radio, presented by Phoenix Boats. Now, here's your host, Tom Abraham.
Final segment of Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio, and as we idle this show back to the dock, let's take a look at some news and notes from around the pond. Now, Marshall spots are still available for regular season Elite Series events for just $99 per tournament. We'll see what happens with the Marshall program, but you can go ahead and reserve a spot as we speak. Now, as part of this program, at every tournament, the participants will enjoy an exclusive dinner and a meet and greet with all of the elite anglers, as well as receive official Bassmaster Marshall apparel and products from tournament sponsors. Visit Bassmaster.com/elite for Marshall registration. Now, the 2020 BassPro.com Opens season is underway. We've had one postponement. We'll see again. These tournaments will get fished. So visit Bassmaster.com/opens for all the info you need to get registered for this series. It's the highest level that a co-angler can fish, and it's a tremendous way to hone your skills, to learn from the pros, and maybe even make a few bucks as you compete against the other co-anglers. I've competed for 3 years as a co-angler in this series, and it is absolutely outstanding. And this year's pro field is better than ever. So grab a co-angler spot now. And while you're at Bassmaster.com, click on the sweepstakes tab for your chance to fish with Bassmaster Elite Series Angler of the Year, Scott Canterbury. The sweepstakes winner receives round-trip airfare within the continental United States, a three-night hotel stay, car rental, and $500 in cash. The winner will also receive an incredible prize package that includes a Skeeter ZX190W boat with a Yamaha Show 150 engine, plus other great prizes, bringing the total value to over $52,000. And while you're at Bassmaster.com, don't forget to sign up for Rapala Fantasy Fishing. Each week's winner will win $4,000 in cash and prizes, $4,500 if you're a member of BASS. And this year, over 190 places are paid for each event, and the grand prize is over $20,000 in cash and prizes. Just go to Bassmaster.com and click on Fantasy for rules and to get in today. And while you're at it, join our Bassmaster Radio group, where each event's winner will receive a rod and reel combo from Enigma. And then everyone who finishes ahead of me in each event is entered into a drawing for a prize package from our friends at visitanderson.com, Rapala, Missile Baits, and Phoenix Boats. Just search Bassmaster Radio under the groups tab. No sense looking at the upcoming tournament schedule right now because that is in flux, but we will tell you that if you missed any of this week's show, it's only just a click away at Bassmaster.com/radio, or just hit the watch button and click on Bassmaster Radio at Bassmaster.com. So until next time, keep those lines tight and nets heavy. I'm Tom Abraham, and this has been Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio on the Bassmaster Radio Network.